The lectionary gospel reading comes, as always, this year, almost all entirely from the Gospel of Luke. We're in the 12th chapter, beginning with verse 13. Someone in the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." But Jesus said to him, "Friend, who set me to be a judge or arbitrator over you?" And Jesus said to them, "Take care. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions." Then Jesus told them a parable. The land of a rich man produced abundantly, and he thought to himself, "What should I do, for I have no place to store my crops?" Then he said, "I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, 'Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your life is being demanded of you. And the things you have prepared, whose will they be?' So it is with those who store up treasures for themselves, but are not rich toward God." May God bless the reading and the hearing of this word. Amen. Have you ever come down with a case of pleonexia? I have from time to time, and it's very hard to cure. It kind of fits into the category of an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, in that it's better to try to avoid the problem in the first place than trying to fix it once it hits. Well, by the way, if you're wondering, what is pleonexia? Well, pleonexia is the Greek word used in this morning's gospel lesson from Luke 12:15, which is translated into the English as greed. Jesus gives a very stern warning to the crowd. Watch out! Be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. This message is perhaps even more relevant in our day and age, dominated by our culture of consumerism, than it was for those living in a predominantly peasant agricultural society 2,000 years ago in ancient Palestine. But evidently, it was a problem even then as well. And by saying that our lives do not consist of the abundance of our possessions, Jesus is telling us that ultimately, our lives are defined not by what we have, but rather by who we are. Try getting that message across to a child who wants just the right toy. Or, I guess in this day and age, an iPad. Or a young person who is under enormous peer pressure to wear just the right name brand tennis shoes or clothes. Or adults who feel pressure to drive just the right car or live in just the right house in just the right neighborhood. Something I used to be particularly prone to, having the very latest and best electronic equipment. The warning to beware of all kinds of greed begs the question that we must constantly ask of ourselves. How much is enough? The problem usually arises when we confuse the things we need with the things we want in order to live a fulfilling life. And that especially applies when we go deeper into debt, trying to acquire and get all that stuff. Though most of us probably don't have a lot of money left over at the end of each month, let's face it, we are all rich, very rich, in comparison with the economic standards of most of the rest of the world's population. But let me pause here for just a moment and stress that there is a very big difference between being wealthy and being greedy. So what is greed? Well, most simply, it is defined as the desire to acquire or possess more than we need. Greed seeks possessions, to get our hands on whatever we can, to acquire without reference to our own specific needs or to the situation and needs of others. And greed also has a very strong connection with that word covet, which is one of the warnings in the Ten Commandments about desiring what other people have. The ancient Romans even had a proverb that said, money is like seawater. The more persons drink, the thirstier they become. A New Testament commentator, William Barclay, over 60 years ago, described pleonexia as an accursed love of having, which will pursue its own interests with complete disregard for the rights of others and even for the considerations of common humanity. Again, the basis for the warning against greed is the assertion that true authentic living is not to be found in and through our possessions, but rather in how we live our lives in relationship to God and to each other. And the Apostle Paul goes as far as to label greed a form of idolatry. When we substitute our search for the divine with the search for wealth and possessions, and in doing so, ignore God and the ways of God in the process. True wealth, writes one biblical commentator, is only accumulated when one has God in mind in the use of one's economic means. So that applies to every single one of us, no matter how rich or how poor. And that is the point that is made in the parable that Jesus tells about a rich man who was called a fool for storing up treasures just for himself while not being concerned about being, quote, rich toward God. And with this parable, Jesus provides us an object lesson of how not to live as his disciples. And it is very important to note, however, that the parable does not criticize the accumulation of wealth in and of itself. What is criticized is the selfishness and not becoming rich in spiritual matters, and also for spending our life living for tomorrow instead of living today in the here and now. What is called for, of course, is a balance. This parable, therefore, is not an outright condemnation or criticism against those who have money and wealth. But the gospel writer Luke, on the other hand, may have a bit of his own agenda going on when he reports and records this parable. Because from his theological perspective, riches, as in having wealth and possessions and elite economic status, are not neutral. For Luke, riches are inherently negative. And why? Because in ancient Palestine, people became rich primarily by exploiting the poor. From Luke's perspective, therefore, there is a life-threatening nature to riches, for it is a zero-sum game. A person became rich only when others became or stayed poor. And there is indeed an element of this fact that continues to this day. In fact, it was even the foundation of one candidate who was running for president. So with that in mind, let's just take a brief, closer look at Jesus' parable. We learn that the farmer's barns aren't big enough to contain all the grain of his bountiful year's bumper crop. And that would in and of itself been interpreted as a blessing from God. So as a wise business manager, he upgrades his storage facilities so that all his harvest can be maintained efficiently. And when the work is done, he will then be in a position to relax and enjoy his good fortune. There's nothing wrong with that, is there? Don't we all try to save for a rainy day or for retirement? All the farmer's responsibilities and life will now have been met, and all the needs of his life will now be satisfied, or so he thinks. Like many of Jesus' parables, there is a twist. And the twist in this one comes when God informs the farmer that he will die that very night. After spending a lifetime trying to secure his financial future, he only has a few hours left to enjoy it, to eat, drink, and be merry. One of the greatest regrets of dying persons is that they worked too hard and didn't spend enough time simply enjoying life and relationships. And that's why our Old Testament reading for today from the book of Ecclesiastes calls all of these pursuits vanity of vanities. All is vanity. And it compares it to the impossible task of chasing after the wind. But remember, however, the farmer is not being criticized or condemned for accumulating wealth and securing his financial security. Rather, he becomes an example of foolish living by neglecting to also focus his attention on spiritual matters, on the ways of God. For without an eye toward godly things, the farmer's craving to keep all his good fortune only for him, his own personal enjoyment, is in fact a total act of disregard for the needs of others. You notice the farmer hasn't done anything illegal. He hasn't stolen from his neighbor or even mistreated his workers. However, the parable declares that he is a fool for living completely in and for himself. He is greedy. He suffers from pleonexia in that he is selfish and self-absorbed. So being a rich fool, therefore, does not automatically apply to all people who are materially wealthy, but for those who do not think about God and how God would have us use our resources with an eye toward others. So in the context of the Gospel of Luke, and within this community of faith, that means that we are to share our blessings and our good fortunes with others. All of this is another way of saying how important it is that living a life of faith involves good and faithful stewardship of all of our resources, our time and talent as well. And how many of us in this society that we live in today, including myself, simply use our increased wealth to upgrade and buy more stuff rather than to give more and more away, including to those in need and to organizations that seek to help others? Now, admittedly, today's message may not be the one that you nor I want to hear. It's one of those that makes looking in the mirror a bit painful. But perhaps we need to hear and heed the warning to be on guard against all kinds of greed, to be reminded that wealth does not really and ultimately secure the future, and that living a truly fulfilling life is a gift from God and not a hard-earned acquisition. So I'll leave you with the following questions to ponder and reflect upon. And yes, I ask these of myself. What do your possessions really mean to you? Which ones fulfill your wants rather than your needs? How much is enough? Do you get trapped from time to time in the preoccupation and temptation of accumulating possessions? Damn eBay. How do you deal with the dilemma of abundance in having wealth without greed? And how does the reality of our own mortality play into how we invest our wealth as well as invest our time? And how do we keep God and other people in mind in the use of your financial resources and stewardship? Let us all be on guard, then, as we strive for a cure for pleonexia and focus on what it means to be rich toward God. Amen.